This is cassette number 2.
I'm wearing mostly black, Richard said. It's warm, so I'd left my gold cape behind, here in the carriage. The little bit of gold on the rest of the outfit only serves to break up the shape of a man's figure in the near dark, so they had an even harder time seeing me. Once I took down Albert, they stopped thinking and fought with pure anger until they started seeing blood and death. Those men are used to brawls, not battles. They had expected an easy time murdering us. They weren't mentally prepared to fight for their own lives. Once they saw the true nature of what was happening, they ran for their lives. The ones left, anyway. These are my woods. In their panic, they became confused and lost their way in the trees. I cut them off and ended it. Did you get them all? Kara asked, worried about any who might escape and bring more men after them. Yes. I knew most of them. And besides, I had their number in my head. I counted the bodies to make sure I got them all. How many? Kara asked. Richard turned to take up the reins. Not enough for their purpose. He clicked his tongue and started the horses moving. Chapter 5. Richard rose up and drew his sword. This time, when its distinctive sound rang out in the night, Kaylin was awake. Her first instinct was to sit up. Before she even had time to think better of it, Richard had crouched and gently restrained her with a reassuring hand. She lifted her head just enough to see that it was Kara, leading a man into the harsh, flickering light of the campfire. Richard sheathed his sword when he saw who Kara had with her. Captain Myford, the Daharan officer who had been with them back in Andarith. Before any other greeting, the man dropped to his knees and bent forward, touching his forehead to the soft ground, strewn with pine needles. "Master Rahl, guide us! Master Rahl, teach us! Master Rahl, protect us!" Captain Myford beseeched in sincere reverence. "In your light we thrive. In your mercy we are sheltered. In your wisdom we are humbled. We live only to serve. Our lives are yours." When he had gone to his knees to recite the devotion, as it was called, Kaylin saw Kara almost reflexively go to her knees with him. So ingrained was the ritual. The supplication to their Lord Rahl was something all the Harans did. In the field they commonly recited it once or on occasion 3 times. At the people's palace in Dahara, most people gathered twice a day to chant the devotion at length. When he'd been a captive of Darkin Rahl, Richard, often in much the same condition as Tommy Lancaster just before he died, had himself been forced to his knees by Mord Sith and made to perform the devotion for hours at a time. Now the Mord Sith, like all Daharans, paid that same homage to Richard. If the Mord Sith saw such a turn of events as improbable or even ironic, they never said as much. What many of them had found improbable was that Richard hadn't had them all executed when he became their Lord Rahl. It was Richard, though, who had discovered that the devotion to their Lord Rahl was in fact a surviving vestige of a bond, an ancient magic invoked by one of his ancestors to protect the Daharan people from the Dreamwalkers. It had long been believed that the Dreamwalkers, created by wizards to be weapons during that ancient and nearly forgotten Great War, had vanished from the world. The conjuring of strange and varied abilities, of instilling unnatural attributes in people, willing or not, had once been a dark art, the results always being, at the least, unpredictable, often uncertain, and sometimes dangerously unstable. Somehow, some spark of that malignant manipulation had been passed down generation after generation, lurking unseen for 3,000 years, until it rekindled in the person of Emperor Jagang. Kaylin knew something about the alteration of living beings to suit a purpose. Confessors were such people, as had been the Dreamwalkers. In Jagang, Kaylin saw a monster created by magic. She knew many people saw the same in her. Much as some people had blonde hair or brown eyes, she had been born to grow tall, with warm brown hair and green eyes, and the ability of a confessor. She loved and laughed and longed for things just the same as those born with blonde hair or brown eyes, and without a confessor's special ability. Kaelin used her power for valid moral reasons. Chagang, no doubt, believed the same of himself, and even if he didn't, most of his followers certainly did. Richard, too, had been born with latent power. The ancient adjunct defense of the bond was passed down to any gifted Ra. Without the protection of the bond to Richard, the Lord Ra, whether formally spoken or a silent, heartfelt affinity, anyone was vulnerable to Jagang's power as a dreamwalker. Unlike most other permutations conjured by wizards and living people, the confessor's ability had always remained vital. At least it had until all other confessors had been murdered by order of Dark and Ra. Now, without such wizards and their specialized conjuring, only if Kaelin had children would the magic of the confessors live on. Confessors usually bore girls, but not always. A confessor's power had originally been created for, and had been intended to be used by, women. Like all other conjuring that introduced unnatural abilities in people, this too had had unforeseen consequences. A confessor's male children, it turned out, also bore the power. After it had been learned how treacherous the power could be in men, all male children were scrupulously culled. Kaelin bearing a male child was precisely what the witchwoman Shota feared. Shota knew very well that Richard would never allow his and Kaelin's son to be slain for the past evils of male confessors. Kaelin, too, could never allow Richard's son to be killed. In the past, a confessor's inability to marry out of love was one of the reasons she could emotionally endure the practice of infanticide. Richard, in discovering the means by which he and Kaelin could be together, had altered that equation, too. But Shota didn't simply fear Kaelin giving birth to a male confessor. She feared something of potentially far greater magnitude, a male confessor who possessed Richard's gift. Shota had foretold that Kaelin and Richard would conceive a male child. Shota viewed such a child as an evil monster, dangerous beyond comprehension, and so had vowed to kill their offspring. To prevent such a thing from being required, she had given them the necklace to keep Kaelin from becoming pregnant. They had taken it reluctantly. The alternative was war with the witchwoman. It was for reasons such as this that Richard abhorred prophecy. Kaelin watched as Captain Myford spoke the devotion a third time, Kara's lips moving with his. The soft chant was making Kaelin sleepy. It was a luxury for Kaelin to be able to be down with Richard and Kara in the sheltered camp, beside the warmth of the fire, rather than having to stay in the carriage, especially since the night had turned chilly and damp. With the litter, they could move her more easily and without causing her much pain. Richard would have made the litter sooner, but he hadn't expected to have to abandon the house he had started to build. They were far off the narrow, forsaken road in a tiny clearing concealed in a cleft in a steep rock wall, behind a dense expanse of pine and spruce. A small meadow close by provided a snug paddock for the horses. Richard and Kara had pulled the carriage off the road, behind a mass of deadfall, and hidden it with spruce and balsam boughs. No one but a Dharan bonded to their Lord Rahl had much of a chance of ever finding them in the vast and trackless forest. The secluded spot had a fire pit Richard had dug and ringed with rocks during a previous stay nearly a year before. It hadn't been used since. A protruding shelf of rock about 7 or 8 feet above them prevented the light of the campfire from shining up the rock wall, helping keep the camp hidden. Its slope also kept them snug and dry in the drizzle that had begun to fall. With the fog closing in, too, it was as protected and secure a campsite as Kaelin had ever seen. Richard had been true to his word. It had taken more like 6 hours than 4 to reach the campsite. Richard had proceeded slowly for Kaelin's sake. It was late, and they were all tired from a long day of traveling, to say nothing of the attack. Richard had told her that it looked like it might rain for a day or two, and they would stay in the camp and rest up until the weather cleared. There was no urgency to get where they were going. After the third devotion, Captain Myford came haltingly to his feet. He clapped his right fist to the leather over his heart in salute. Richard smiled, and the two men clasped forearms in a less formal greeting. "How are you doing, Captain?" Richard grasped the man's elbow. "What's the matter? Did you fall off your horse or something?" The captain glanced at Kara to his side.
Well, I'm fine, Lord Rawl. Really.
You look hurt."
"I just had my ribs tickled by your moored Sith, that's all."
"I didn't do it hard enough to break them," Kara scoffed.
"I'm truly sorry, Captain. We had a bit of trouble earlier today. Kara was no doubt worried for our safety when she saw you approaching in the dark."
Richard's eyes turned toward Kara.
"But she still should have been more careful before risking injuring people."
"I'm sure she's sorry and will want to apologize." Kara made a sour face.
"It was dark. I'm not about to take any foolish chances with the life of our Lord Rawl just so—"
"I would hope not," Captain Myford put in before Richard could reprimand her. He smiled at Kara.
"I was once kicked by a stalwart warhorse. You did a better job of putting me down, Mistress Kara. I'm gratified to find Lord Rawl's life is in capable hands. If sore ribs are the price, I willingly accept it."
Kara's face brightened. The captain's simple concession disarmed a potentially nettlesome situation.
"Well, if the ribs bother you, let me know," Kara said dryly, "and I'll kiss them and make them better."
In the silence, as Richard glowered at her, she scratched her ear and finally added,
"Anyway, sorry, but I didn't want to take any chances. As I said, a price I willingly pay. Thank you for your vigilance."
"What are you doing here, Captain?" Richard asked. "General Rybish send you to see if the Lord Rawl is crazy?" Although it was impossible to tell in the firelight, Kaelin was sure that the man's face turned scarlet.
"No, of course not, Lord Rawl. It's just that the general wanted you to have a full report."
"I see." Richard glanced down at their dinner pot.
"When's the last time you ate, Captain? You look a little drawn, besides having sore ribs."
"Well, I've been riding hard, Lord Rawl. I guess yesterday I must have eaten something.
I'm fine, though. I can have something after—"
"Sit down, then," Richard gestured. "Let me get you something hot to eat. It will do you good." As the man reluctantly settled down on the mossy ground beside Kaelin and Kara, Richard scooped some rice and beans into a bowl. He cut a big piece of bannock from what he'd left to cool on the griddle off to the side of the fire. He held the bowl out to the man. Captain Myford saw no way to prevent it, and was now mortified to find himself being served by none other than the Lord Rawl himself. Richard had to lift the food toward him a second time before he took it.
"It's only some rice and beans, Captain. It's not like I'm giving you Kara's hand in marriage."
Kara guffawed.
"Mord Sith don't marry. They simply take a man for a mate if they wish him. He gets no say in it."
Richard glanced up at her. Kaelin knew by Richard's tone that he hadn't meant anything by the comment, but he didn't laugh with Kara. He knew all too well the truth of her words. Such an act was not an act of love, but altogether the opposite. In the uncomfortable silence, Kara realized what she'd said and decided to break some branches down and feed them to the fire. Kaelin knew that Denna, the moored Sith who had captured Richard, had taken him for her mate. Kara knew it too. When Richard would sometimes wake with a start and cling to her, Kaelin wondered if his nightmares were of things imaginary or real. When she kissed his sweat-slicked brow and asked what he had dreamed, he never remembered. She was thankful for that much of it. Richard retrieved a long stick that had been propped against one of the rocks ringing the fire. With his finger, he slid several sizzling pieces of bacon off the stick and into the captain's bowl, and then set the big piece of bannock on top. They had with them a variety of food. Kaelin shared the carriage with all the supplies Richard had picked up along their journey north to Heartland. They had enough staples to last for a good long time.
"Thank you,"
Captain Myford stammered. He brushed back his fall of blonde hair.
"It looks delicious."
"It is," Richard said.
"You're lucky.
I made dinner tonight instead of Kara." Kara, proud of being a poor cook, smiled as if it were an accomplishment of note. Kalin was sure it was a story that would be repeated to wide eyes and stunned disbelief. The Lord Rahl himself serving food to one of his men. By the way the captain ate, she guessed it had been longer than a day since he had eaten. As big as he was, she figured he had to need a lot of food. He swallowed and looked up.
"My horse!"
he began to stand.
"When Mistress Kara—" "I forgot my horse. I need—"
"Eat your food." Richard stood and clapped Captain Myford's shoulder to keep him seated.
"I was going to check on our horses anyway. I'll see to yours as well. I'm sure it would like some water and oats, too."
"But, Lord Rahl, I can't allow you to—"
"Eat. This will save time. When I get back, you'll be done. Then you can give me your report."
Richard's shape became indistinct as he dissolved into the shadows, leaving only a disembodied voice behind.
"But I'm afraid I still won't have any orders for General Rybish."
In the stillness, crickets once again took up their rhythmic chirping. Some distance away, Kalin heard a nightbird calling. Beyond the nearby trees, the horses whinnied contentedly, probably when Richard greeted them. Every once in a while, a feather of mist strayed in under the overhang to dampen her cheek. She wished she could turn on her side and close her eyes. Richard had given her some herb tea, and it was beginning to make her drowsy. At least it dulled the pain, too.
"How are you, Mother Confessor?" Captain Myford asked. "Everyone is terribly worried about you."
A confessor wasn't often confronted with such honest and warm concern. The young man's simple question was so sincere it almost brought Kalin to tears.
"I'm getting better, Captain. Tell everyone I'll be fine after I've had some time to heal. We're going someplace quiet where I can enjoy the fresh air of the arriving summer and get some rest. I'll be better before autumn, I'm sure. By then, I hope Richard will be less worried about me and be able to put his mind to the needs of the war."
The captain smiled.
"Everyone will be relieved to know you're healing. I can't tell you how many people told me that when I return they want to hear how you're doing. Tell them I said I'll be fine, and I asked for them not to worry any more about me, but to take care of themselves."
He ate another spoonful. Kalin saw in his eyes that there was more to the man's anxiety. It took him a moment before he addressed it.
"We are concerned, too, that you and Lord Rahl need protection."
Kara, already sitting straight, nevertheless managed to straighten more, at the same time making the subtle shift in her posture appear threatening.
"Lord Rahl and the Mother Confessor are not without protection, Captain. They have me. Anything more than a moored Sith is just pretty brass buttons."
This time he didn't back down.
His voice rang with the clear tone of authority. "This is not a matter of disrespect, Mistress Kara, nor is presumption intended. Like you, I'm sworn to their safety, and that is my proper concern. These brass buttons have met the enemy before in the defense of Lord Rahl, and I don't really believe a moored Sith would want to deter me from that duty for no more reason than petty pride."
"We're going to a remote and secluded place," Kalin said, before Kara could answer.
"I think our solitude and Kara will be ample protection. If Richard wishes it otherwise, he will say so."
With a reluctant nod, he accepted her answer. The last of it, anyway, settled the matter. When Richard had taken Kalin north, he had left their guard forces behind. She knew it was deliberate, probably part of his conviction about what he felt he had to do. Richard wasn't opposed to the concept of protection. In the past, he had accepted troops being with them. Kara, too, had been insistent on having the security of those troops along. It was different, though, for Kara to admit it directly to Captain Myford. They had spent a good deal of time in Andorith with the captain and his elite forces. Kalin knew him to be a superb officer. She thought he must be approaching his mid-twenties, probably a soldier for a decade already and the veteran of a number of campaigns, from minor rebellions to open warfare. The sharp, wholesome lines of his face were just beginning to take on a mature set. Over millennia, through war, migration, and occupation, other cultures had mixed in with the Dharan, leaving a blend of peoples. Tall and broad-shouldered, Captain Myford was marked as full-blooded Dharan by blonde hair and blue eyes. as was Kara. The bond was strongest in full-blooded Dharans. After he had finished about half his rice, he glanced over his shoulder into the darkness where Richard had gone. His earnest blue eyes took in both Kara and Kalin. "I don't mean it to sound judgmental or personal, and I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, but may I ask you both a sensitive question?"
"You may, Captain," Kalin said, "but I can't promise we will answer it."
The last part gave him pause for a moment, but then he went on. "General Rybish and some of the other officers, well, there have been worried discussions about Lord Rahl. We trust in him, of course," he was quick to add. "We really do, it's just that..."
"So what are your concerns then, Captain?" Kara put in, her brow drawing tight. "If you trust him so much..."
He stirred his wooden spoon around the bowl. "I was there in Andorith through the whole thing. I know how hard he worked, and you too, Mother Confessor. No Lord Rahl before him ever worried about what the people wanted. In the past, the only thing that mattered was what the Lord Rahl wanted. Then, after all that, the people rejected his offer, rejected him. He sent us back to the main force and just left us." He gestured around himself. "To come here, out in the middle of nowhere, to be a recluse or something." He paused while searching for the right words. "We don't understand it exactly." He looked up from the fire, back into their eyes as he went on. "We're worried that Lord Rahl has lost his will to fight, that he simply no longer cares, or perhaps he's afraid to fight." The look on his face told Kalin that he feared reprisal for saying the things he said, and for asking such a question, but he needed the answer enough to risk it. This was probably why he had come to give a report, rather than send a simple messenger. "About 6 hours before he cooked that nice dinner pot of rice and beans," Kara said in a casual manner, "he killed a couple of dozen men, all by himself, hacked them apart like I've never seen before. The violence of it shocked even me. He left only one man for me to dispatch. Quite unfair of him, I think."
Captain Myford looked positively relieved as he let out a long breath. He looked away from Kara's steady gaze and back into his bowl to stir his dinner.
"That news will be well received. Thank you for telling me, Mistress Kara."
"He can't issue orders," Kalin said, "because he unequivocally believes that, for now, if he takes part in leading our forces against the Imperial Order, it would bring about our defeat. He believes that if he enters the battle too soon, we will then have no chance of ever winning. He believes he must wait for the right time, that's all. There's nothing more to it."
Kalin felt a bit conflicted, helping to justify Richard's actions, when she wasn't entirely in favor of them. She felt it was necessary to check the advance of the Imperial Order's army now, and not give them a chance to freely pillage and murder the people of the New World. The captain mulled this over as he ate some bannock. He frowned as he gestured with the piece he had left.
"There is sound battle theory for such a strategy. If you have any choice in it, you only attack when it's on your terms, not the enemy's."
He became more spirited as he thought about it a moment.
"It is better to hold an attack for the right moment, despite the damage an enemy can cause in the interim, than go into a battle before the right time. Such would be an act of poor command."
"That's right."
Kalin laid her arm back and rested her right wrist on her brow. "Perhaps you could explain it to the other officers in those words, that it's premature to issue orders, and he's waiting for the proper time. I don't think that's really any different from the way Richard has explained it to us, but perhaps it would be better understood if put in such terms." The captain ate the last bite of his bannock, seeming to think it over.
"I trust Lord Rahl with my life. I know the others do too, but I think they will be reassured by such an explanation as to why he is withholding his orders. I can see now why he had to leave us. It was to resist the temptation to throw himself into the fray before the time was right."
Kalin wished she was as confident of the reasoning as the captain. She recalled Kara's question, wondering how the people could prove themselves to Richard. She knew he would not be inclined to again try it through a vote, but she didn't see how else the people could prove themselves to him. "I'd not mention it to Richard," she said. "It's difficult for him, not being able to issue orders. He's trying to do what he believes is right, but it's a difficult course to hold to."
"I understand, Mother Confessor. In his wisdom, we are humbled. We live only to serve. Our lives are his."
Kaelin studied the smooth lines and simple angles of his young face lit by the dancing firelight. In that face she saw some of what Richard had been trying to say to her before. "Richard doesn't believe your lives are his, Captain, but that they are your own and priceless. That is what he is fighting for."
He chose his words carefully. If he wasn't worried about her being the Mother Confessor, since he hadn't grown up fearing the power and the rule of such a woman, she was still the Lord Rahl's wife.
"Most of us see how different he is from the last Lord Rahl. I'm not claiming that any of us understands everything about him, but we know he fights to defend rather than to conquer. As a soldier, I know the difference it makes to believe in what I'm fighting for because..."
The captain looked away from her gaze. He lifted a short branch of firewood, tapping the end on the ground for a time. His voice took on a painful inflection.
"Because it takes something precious out of you to kill people who never meant you any harm."
The fire crackled and hissed as he slowly stirred the glowing coals. Sparks swirled up to spill out from around the underside of the rock overhang. Kara watched her Ajil as she rolled it in her fingers.
"You feel that way too?"
Captain Myfrick met Kara's gaze.
"I never realized before what it was doing to me inside. I didn't know."
"Lord Rahl makes me proud to be Dharan. He makes it stand for something right. It never did before.
I thought that the way things were was just the way things were, and they could never change."
Kara's gaze fell away as she privately nodded her agreement. Kaelin could only imagine what life was like living under that kind of rule, what it did to people.
"I'm glad you understand, Captain," Kaelin whispered. "That's one reason he worries so much about all of you. He wants you to live lives you can be proud of, lives that are your own."
He dropped the stick into the fire.
"And he wanted all the people of Andorith to care about themselves the way he wants us to value our lives. The vote wasn't really for him, but for themselves. That was why the vote meant so much to him."
"That's why," Kaelin confirmed, afraid to test her own voice any further than that. He stirred his spoon around to cool his dinner. It no longer needed cooling, she was sure. She supposed his thoughts were being stirred more than his dinner.
"You know," he said, "one of the things I heard people say back in Andorith was that since Darkin Rahl was his father, Richard Rahl was evil, too. They said that since his father had done wrong, Richard Rahl might sometimes do good, but he could never be a good person."
"I heard that, too," Kara said. "Not just in Andorith, but a lot of places."
"That's wrong. Why should people think that just because one of his parents was cruel, those crimes pass on to someone who never did them, and that he must spend his life making amends? I'd hate to think that if I'm ever lucky enough to have children, they and then their children after that would have to suffer forever for the things I've done serving under Darkin Rahl."
He looked over at Kaelin and Kara.
"Such prejudice isn't right."
In the silence, Kara stared into the flames.
"I served under Darkin Rahl. I know the difference in the two men."
His voice lowered with simmering anger.
"It's wrong of people to lay guilt for the crimes of Darkin Rahl onto his son."
"You're right about that," Kara murmured. "The two may look a little alike, but anyone who has ever looked into the eyes of both men as I have could never begin to think they were the same kind of men."
Chapter 6
Captain Myford ate the rest of his rice and beans in silence. Kara offered him her water skin. He took it with a smile and his nod of thanks.
She dished him out a second bowlful from the pot and cut him another piece of bannock. He looked only slightly less mortified to be served by a moored Sith than by the Lord Rao. Kara found his expression amusing. She called him Brass Buttons and told him to eat it all. He did so as they listened to the sounds of the fire snapping and water dripping from the pine needles onto the carpet of leaves and other debris of the forest floor. Richard returned, loaded down with the captain's bedroll and saddlebags. He let them slip to the ground beside the officer and then shook water off himself before sitting down beside Kaelin. He offered her a drink from a full water skin he'd brought back. She took only a sip. She was more interested in being able to rest her hand on his leg. Richard yawned. "So, Captain Myford, you said the general wanted you to give a full report?"
"Yes, sir."
The captain went into a long and detailed account on the state of the army to the south, how they were stationed out in the plains, what passes they guarded in the mountains, and how they planned on using the terrain, should the Imperial orders suddenly come up out of Andorith and move north into the Midlands. He reported on the health of the men and their supply situation, both good. The other half of General Rybish's Dharan force was back in Aden Drill, protecting the city, and Kaelin was relieved to hear that everything there was in order. Captain Myford relayed all the communications they'd received from around the Midlands, including from Kelton and Galea, two of the largest lands of the Midlands that were now allied with the new Dharan Empire. The allied lands were helping to keep the army supplied, in addition to providing men for rotation of patrols, scouting land they knew better, and other work. Kaelin's half-brother Harold had brought word that Cirilla, Kaelin's half-sister, had taken a turn for the better. Cirilla had been queen of Galea. After her brutal treatment in the hands of the enemy, she became emotionally unbalanced and was unable to serve as queen. In her rare conscious moments, worried for her people, she had begged Kaelin to be queen in her stead. Kaelin had reluctantly agreed, saying it was only until Cirilla was well again. Few people thought she would ever have her mind back, but apparently it looked as if she might yet recover. In order to soothe the ruffled feathers of Galea's neighboring land, Kelton, Richard had named Kaelin Queen of Kelton. When Kaelin first heard what Richard had done, she had thought it was lunacy. Strange as the arrangement was, though, it suited both lands, and brought them not only peace with each other, but also into the fold of those lands fighting against the Imperial Order. Kara was pleasantly surprised to hear that a number of Mord Sith had arrived at the Confessor's Palace in Aden Drill, in case Lord Rao needed them. Verdeen would no doubt be pleased to have some of her sister Mord Sith with her in Aden Drill. Kaelin missed Aden Drill. She guessed the place you grew up could never leave your heart. The thought gave her a pang of sorrow for Richard.
"That would be Rika," Kara said with a smile. "Wait until she meets the new Lord Rao," she added under her breath, finding that even more to smile about.
Kaelin's thoughts turned to the people they had left to the Imperial Order, or more accurately, to the people who had chosen the Imperial Order.
"Have you received any reports from Andorith?"
"Yes, from a number of men we sent in there. I'm afraid we lost some, too. The ones who returned report that there were fewer enemy deaths from the poisoned waters than we had hoped. Once the Imperial Order discovered their soldiers dying or sick, they tested everything on the local people first. A number of them died or became sick, but it wasn't widespread. By using the people to test the food and water, they were able to isolate the tainted food and destroy it. The army has been laying claim to everything. They use a lot of supplies." The Imperial Order was said to be far larger than any army ever assembled. Kaelin knew that much of the reports to be accurate. The Order dwarfed the Dharan and Midland troops arrayed against them perhaps 10 or 20 to 1. Some reports claimed more than that. Some reports claimed the New World forces were outnumbered by 100 to 1. But Kaelin discounted that as outright panic. She didn't know how long the Order would feed off Andorith before they moved on, or if they were being resupplied from the Old World. They had to be, to some extent, anyway.
"How many scouts and spies did we lose?" Richard asked.
Captain Myford looked up.
It was the first question Richard had asked.
Some may yet turn up, but it appears likely that we lost 50 to 60 men.
Richard sighed.
And General Ribish thinks it was worth losing the lives of those men to discover this?
Captain Myford cast about for an answer.
We didn't know what we would discover, Lord Rall. That was why we sent them in. Do you wish me to tell the General not to send in any more men?
Richard was carving a face in a piece of firewood, sporadically tossing shavings into the fire. He sighed.
No, he must do as he sees fit. I've explained to him that I can't issue orders.
The captain, watching Richard pick small chips of wood from his lap and pitch them into the fire, tossed a small fan of pine needles into the flames where it blazed in short-lived glory. Richard's carving was a remarkably good likeness of the captain. Kaelin had, on occasion, seen Richard casually carve animals or people. She once had strongly suggested that his ability was guided by his gift. He scoffed at such a notion, saying that he had liked to carve ever since he was little. She reminded him that art was used to cast spells, and that once he had been captured with the aid of a drawn spell. He insisted this was nothing like that. As a guide, he said he'd passed many an evening at camp by himself, carving. Not wanting to carry the added weight, he would toss the finished piece into the fire. He said he enjoyed the act of carving and would always carve another. Kaelin considered the carvings inspired, and found it distressing to see them destroyed.
"What do you intend to do, Lord Rall, if I may ask?"
Richard took a smooth, steady slice that demarcated the line of an ear, bringing it to life along with the line of the jaw he had already cut. He looked up and stared off into the night.
"We're going to a place back in the mountains, where other people don't go, so we can be alone and safe. The Mother Confessor will be able to get well there and gain back her strength. While we're there, I may even make Kara start wearing a dress." Kara shot to her feet.
"What?"
When she saw Richard's smile, Kara realized he was only joking. She fumed nonetheless.
"I'd not report that part of it to the General were I you, Captain," Richard said.
Kara sank back down to the ground.
"Not if Brass Buttons here values his ribs," she muttered.
Kaelin struggled not to chuckle, lest she twist the ever-present knives in her ribs. Sometimes she felt as if she knew how the chunk of wood Richard was carving felt. It was good to see Richard for once get the best of Kara. It was usually she who had him flustered.
"I can't help you for now," Richard said, his serious tone returning.
He went back to work with his knife. "I hope you can all accept that."
"Of course, Lord Rall. We know that you will lead us into battle when the time is right."
"I hope that day comes, Captain. I really do. Not because I want to fight, but because I hope there to be something to fight for." Richard stared into the fire, his countenance a chilling vision of despair.
"Right now, there isn't."
"Yes, Lord Rall," Captain Myford said, finally breaking the uncomfortable silence.
"We will do as we think best until the Mother Confessor is better, and you are then able to join us."
Richard didn't argue the time schedule, as the captain had described it. It was one Kaelin hoped for, too, but Richard had never said that it would be that soon. He had, in fact, made it clear to them that the time might not ever come. He cradled the wood in his lap, studying what he had done. He ran his thumb along the fresh-cut line of the nose as he asked,
"Did the returning scout say how it fared for the people in Andrith with the Imperial Order there?"
Kaelin knew he was only torturing himself by asking that question. She wished he hadn't asked. It could do him no good to hear the answer. Captain Myford cleared his throat.
"Well, yes, they did report on the conditions."
"And?" The young officer launched into a cold report of the facts they knew.
"Jagang set up his troop headquarters in the capital of Fairfield. He took over the Minister of Culture's estate for himself. Their army is so huge that it swallowed the city and overflows far out onto the hills all around. The Andrith army put up little resistance. They were collected, and all summarily put to death. The government of Andorith for the most part ceased to exist within the first few hours. There is no rule or law. The Order spent the first week in unchecked celebration. Most people in Fairfield were displaced and lost everything they owned. Many fled. The roads all around were packed solid with those trying to escape what was happening in the city. The people fleeing the city only ended up being the spoils for the soldiers in the hills all around, who couldn't fit into the city. Only a trickle, mostly the very old and sickly, made it past that gauntlet. His impersonal tone abandoned him. He had spent time with those people, too. I'm afraid that, in all, it went badly for them, Lord Rall. There was a horrendous amount of killing, of the men anyway, in the tens of thousands, likely more. They got what they asked for. Kara's voice was as cold as winter night. They picked their own fate, Kaelin agreed, but didn't say so. She knew Richard agreed too. None of them were pleased about it, though. And the countryside? Richard asked. Anything known about places outside Fairfield? Is it going better for them? No better, Lord Rall. The Imperial Order has been methodically going about a process of pacifying the land, as they call it. Their soldiers are accompanied by the gifted. By far the worst of the accounts were about one called Death's Mistress. Who? Kara asked. Death's Mistress, they call her. Her? Must be the sisters, Richard said. Which ones do you think it would be? Kara asked. Richard, cutting the mouth into the firewood face, shrugged. Jagang has both Sisters of the Light and Sisters of the Dark held captive. He's a dreamwalker. He forces both to do his bidding. It could be either. The woman is simply his tool. I don't know, Captain Myford said. We've had plenty of reports about the sisters and how dangerous they are, but they're being used, like you said, as tools of the army, weapons, basically, not as his agents. Jagang doesn't let them think for themselves or direct anything. This one, from the reports anyway, behaves very differently from the others. She acts as Jagang's agent, but still, the word is she decides things for herself and does as she pleases. The men who came back reported that she is more feared than Jagang himself. The people of one town, when they heard she was coming their way, all gathered together in the town square. They made the children drink poison first, and the adults took their dose. Every last person in the town was dead when the woman arrived, close to 500 people. Richard had stopped carving as he listened. Kaelin knew that unfounded rumors could also be so lurid as to turn alarm into deadly panic, to the point where people would rather die than face the object of their dread. Fear was a powerful tool of war. Richard went back to the carving in his lap. He held the knife near the tip of the point like a pen and carefully cut character into the eyes. They didn't get a name for her, did they? This Death's Mistress? I'm sorry, no, Lord Rall. They said she is simply called by everyone, Death's Mistress. Sounds like an ugly witch, Kara said. Quite the contrary. She has blue eyes and long blonde hair. She is said to be one of the most beautiful women you could ever lay eyes upon. They say she looks like a vision of a good spirit. Kaelin couldn't help notice the captain's furtive glance at Kara, who had blue eyes and long blonde hair, and was also one of the most beautiful women you could ever lay eyes upon. She, too, was deadly. Richard was frowning. Blonde, blue eyes. There are several it could be. Too bad they didn't catch your name. Sorry, but they gave no other name, Lord Rall, only that description. Oh, yes, and that she always wears black. Dear spirits, Richard whispered as he rose to his full height, gripping his carving by its throat. From what I've been told, Lord Rall, though she looks like a vision of one, the good spirits themselves would fear her. With good reason, Richard said as he stared into the distance, as if looking beyond the black wall of mist to a place only he could see.
You know her then, Lord Rahl?
Kaelin listened to the fire pop and crackle as she waited along with the other two for his answer. It almost seemed Richard was trying to find his voice as his gaze sank back down to meet the eyes of the carving in his hand.
I know her, he said at last. I know her all too well.
She was one of my teachers at the Palace of the Prophets. Richard tossed his carving into the flames.
Pray you never have to look into Nikki's eyes, Captain.
Chapter 7
Look into my eyes, child,
Nikki said in her soft, silken voice as she cupped the girl's chin. Nikki lifted the bony face. The eyes, dark and wide-set, blinked with dull bewilderment. There was nothing to be seen in them. The girl was simple. Nikki straightened, feeling a hollow disappointment. She always did. She sometimes found herself looking into people's eyes like this, and then wondering why. If she was searching for something, she didn't know what it was. She resumed her leisurely walk down the line of the townspeople, all assembled along one side of the dusty market square. People in outlying farms and smaller communities no doubt came into the town several times a month on market days, some staying overnight if they had come from far away. This wasn't a market day, but it would suit her purpose well enough. A few of the crowded buildings had a second story, typically a room or two for a family over their small shop. Nikki saw a bakery, a cobbler's shop, a shop selling pottery, a blacksmith, an herbalist, a shop offering leatherwork, the usual places. One of these towns was much the same as the next. Many of the townspeople worked the surrounding fields of wheat or sorghum, tended animals, and had extensive vegetable plots. Dung, straw, and clay being plentiful, they lived in homes of daub and wattle. A few of the shops with a second story boasted beam construction with clapboard siding. Behind her, sullen soldiers bristling with weapons filled the majority of the square. They were tired from the hot ride and, worse, bored. Nikki knew they were a twitch away from a rampage. A town, even one with meager plunder, was an inviting diversion. It wasn't so much the taking as the breaking that they liked. Sometimes, though, it was the taking. The nervous women only rarely met the soldiers' bold stares. As she strolled past the scruffy people, Nikki looked into the eyes watching her. Most were wide with terror and fixed not on the soldiers, but on the object of their dread. Nikki, or as people had taken to calling her, Death's Mistress. The designation neither pleased nor displeased her. It was simply a fact, she noted, a fact of no more significance to her than if someone had told her that they had mended a pair of her stockings. Some, she knew, were staring at the gold ring through her lower lip. Gossip would have already informed them that a woman so marked was a personal slave to Emperor Jagang, something lower even than simple peasants such as themselves. That they stared at the gold ring or what they thought of her for it was of even less significance to her than being called Death's Mistress. Jagang only possessed her body in this world. The Keeper would have her soul for eternity in the next. Her body's existence in this world was torment. Her spirit's existence in the next would be no less. Existence and torment were simply the two sides of the same coin. There could be no other. Smoke rolling up from the fire pit over her left shoulder sailed away on a fitful wind to make a dark slash across the bright blue afternoon sky. Stacked stones to each side of the communal cooking pit supported a rod above the fire. Two or three pigs or sheep skewered on the rod could be roasted at once. Temporary sides were probably available to convert the fire pit into a smokehouse. At other times, an outdoor fire pit was used, often in conjunction with butchering for the making of soap, since making soap was not something typically done indoors. Nikki saw a wooden ash pit used for making lye standing to the side of the open area, along with a large iron kettle that could be used for rendering fat. Lye and fat were the primary ingredients of soap. Some women like to add fragrance to their soap with herbs and such, like lavender or rosemary. When Nikki was little, her mother made her go each autumn, when the butchering was being done, to help people make soap. Her mother said helping others built proper character.
This is the end of Side 1. This program is continued on Side 2 of this cassette.